The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, well, we love our next guest. He is a good friend and somebody we really respect, and a man who knows history. He really he has a personal history. He's followed the footsteps of his father, who is a great man on Wall Street. And Sam himself is really one of the best guests we've ever had. And we're looking forward to talking to him today to get his take on what's going on. We've got with us today Sam Stovall. Sam is Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy of S&P Capital IQ's Global Markets Intelligent Group. Boy, that's a mouthful. He also serves as an analyst, publisher, and communicator of S&P's outlooks for the economy, market, and sectors. He is the chairman of the Standard & Poor's Investment Policy Committee. And he's a good friend and a smart guy. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for that intro.
Oh, it's great to have you on, because I really want to know. All right, give us some perspective here in history. What is your feeling about what's going on here?
Well, you know, I think that the Fed minutes of a week or so ago really was the straw that broke the markets back, and we went through a long overdue correction. We had gone 47 months without a decline of 10% or more as compared with the average of 18 months since World War II. We finally got it, and now I think we are going through what I call the pop after the drop. And now the real question is, what happens after we have extinguished, if you will, or, you know, worked our way through this near-tomb euphoria, you know, trying to figure out where we go next?
Do you believe in this pop after the drop, or is it just that, where it's just going to pop and then fizzle out, and we go right back down again?
Well, typically what we find is that we have to retest the prior low, meaning that we could move higher over the next couple of days or weeks, but then we end up sort of retesting. We're going to go back down into the lower 1900 area, and if the closing low of 1867 holds, then that is a good positive signal that the worst is behind us. But one point that bothers me is that on that 1867 low on the S&P 500, the price-to-earnings ratio only got back to the long-term median. Usually what we find is that markets overshoot to both the upside and the downside, and we had no overshoot at all.
What you're saying then, that we didn't really go down that much?
That we didn't go down enough to really set the dials, in my opinion.
All right.
In terms of price change, yes, we shook off an awful lot of loose hands, as we call it.
Okay, so that what that means is that all these guys that are saying – that are coming out and saying we're still in our continued bullish uptrend, that's really what they're saying, is that, you know, we're still in an uptrend. Yeah, we, you know, the markets got rattled a little bit, but you didn't get really, as you would say, a reset. We're really starting from a solid base of a true recovery of the sell-off.
That's right. I mean, we are not out of this bull trend yet, but we are going through a corrective process within the bull trend. What I'm saying to investors is don't feel that you've missed the boat and that you have to now chase these returns. I think, you know, we've all heard that there are two emotions that drive prices, fear and greed. I think it's really fear of losing money on the way down and fear of missing out on the way back up. And usually, but not always, the market gives you a second chance to get in, and I would not be surprised if we get that second chance this time around as well.
Any predictions on when that's going to happen? Are we?
Could
that happen
Wednesday
historically?
At 4 o'clock. Yes.
No, thank you.
No. What I'm saying is that historically, because I know you look a lot in back in history. Historically, can it be months and before this happens, or even a year, or does it generally happen within a 6 month period of time, for instance, where you get this one more bite at the apple?
Well, I got some good news for you, Mike. Usually, corrections take about 5 months to materialize. Thank goodness, because then I don't have to take off my shoes to count. So, if we peaked out on May 21st of this year, and it took us 3 months in order for this for us to break below the 5% decline threshold, you know, then I would tend to say that maybe we end up bottoming sometime in September. And then remember that it only takes 4 months on average to get back to break even. That's why I encourage investors not to try to time the market, because you might be smart in knowing when to get out, but chances are you'll end up getting back in at a price that's higher than where you got out. August is a bad month. It's the second worst month of the year. But guess which is the worst month? The one we're moving into.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. And I think I think you and Tom McClellan are going to the same barbecues or something like that, because Tom was on with us last week and indicated that he thought, first of all, he almost just about predicted this sell-off. And he too said that he, from looking at his charts, that he thinks that there'll be a September bottom out there somewhere. Let me add to that.
First off, you're absolutely right, and it was a good thing you had him on your show, because he did say that last Thursday would be an ugly drop, and she was certainly correct. Let me add that in the 11 times since World War II that the market fell by 5% or more in August, we fell an additional 4% in September, and we posted a decline 73% of the time. Now, obviously, that's not a guarantee, but it does imply that the chances are higher that we end up seeing additional downside than not.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Now, when you look at things, Sam, when you do your analysis, is it fundamental? Is it technical? Is it a combination of the two?
It's a combination. What I do is I start with history to get an idea of where we are right now and what has happened whenever we've been in this kind of a scenario in the past. I realize, I love to say that history is a great guide, but it's never gospel. So what I try to do is then overlay history with our economic outlooks, our fundamental or earnings forecasts, and even, you know, read up on what technicians say, because while fundamentals will tell you why, technicals tell you when and how far. So I try to use all of those things together, because history by itself, you know, think of it as the singer of the national anthem. Sometimes they forget the words.
Yeah, that's true. Now, in history, you know, they say that the most dangerous words in investing is that it's different this time. But with all the manipulations by governments around the world, I mean, the one reason that the markets are happy this morning, it looks like, when they open up, is that the Chinese government apparently stepped in yesterday or overnight while we were sleeping and started buying large cap stocks. And you've had, obviously, I don't know if you'd call it manipulation, but you certainly have had a stimulus provided by our Federal Reserve into our markets. Does this skew history a little bit? I mean, does this cause you to maybe question whether or not something will repeat itself the same way it has in the past?
Not really. What I find very interesting is that when markets are going up and somebody says, I think you should buy because this time it's different, everybody then responds, it's never different. But on the way down, everybody says, this time it is different. So it just, again, indicates to me that fear is a greater motivator than greed. And on the way down, people come up with all the different reasons why this time will be different, when in fact, you know, looked in combination with other declines, et cetera, it ends up looking fairly similar.
Interesting. And what about people not being in the market? You know, a lot of people are beginning to say, you know, people, the investing public have been net sellers since the crash of 2008. Obviously, this has got some more of them to step onto the sidelines. Is that going to impact the markets going forward?
Well, I think it actually gives reason to be a bit more optimistic going forward, simply because there's that much more cash on the sidelines. So if we do find that this recovery ends up being a bit quicker than anticipated, we might find that people say, oh, what the heck, and then they throw in the towel, and then we end up with that explosive top with the retail investor getting back in.
I hope you're right, Sam. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about the Tina market. Stay with us, folks.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Anyway, we've got with us today one of our favorite guests, Mr. Sam Stovall. Sam is Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy of Standard & Poor's Capital IQ's Global Markets Intelligent Group. He is also Chairman of the Standard & Poor's Investment Policy Committee. Sam, I guess it was two visits ago, you brought to something that I had not heard. And then the last time we had you on, you identified who the author was. But you brought something that was very interesting and significant, and something that I've used many, many times. You talked about this stock market as being a TINA market. There is no alternative to the market, which I think is one of the reasons that drives the consumer to consider investing, is that they obviously are not getting their 6% and 7% CDs, and so particularly in the dividend paying stocks, they're really looking for income. Do you still think that moniker still exists? Is there still no alternative to this market?
I think that's true, that investors are focusing on equities because they can get higher dividend yields than they can from from cash. Also, because stocks have the growth potential in addition to the dividend yield, they're shying away from bonds, especially because of the worry that the Fed will be raising rates either at the September, October, or December meetings. And when you look to commodities, well, they're getting hammered because with the prospect of higher interest rates, that's causing the U.S. dollar to strengthen, and a higher dollar tends to push down commodity prices. So, again, whenever you seem to get buying opportunities in stocks, investors don't allow them to be on sale for too long.
Right, absolutely. So, and certainly now that we've had some little recovery in the 10-year bond. It was below 1%, below 2% early in the week. Now it's 2.2. But looks to me like it's going to be, even if Feds raise the rates, and certainly Dudley was talking about that yesterday, which I think had an impact on the market. But even if they were to raise the rates in September, October, or December, they're not going to raise them enough, I think, to draw really much capital away from the stock market. Don't you agree?
Oh, I would agree, absolutely. Also, I like to say that a boxer is rarely felled by the punch he expects. And since we've been expecting higher rates for quite some time, I actually think that the stock market will rise the minute the Fed does finally start to raise rates, because now the uncertainty is over. And as you said, a 0.25% increase in rates is not going to kill anybody. Actually, when you look back in history, with us having a 1.8% core CPI reading, or basically inflation a shade below 2%, history would say that the Fed funds rate should be closer to 3%, not the near 0% that we're experiencing now.
Wow. Well, I guess we're going to have a TINA market for a while. Anyway, during the break, you talked about that we should talk about the wisdom of Warren. What did you mean by that?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, Warren Buffett was on financial TV talking about the market. Somebody asked him whether he ever tried to time the market, and he said, no, I'm not smart enough to do that, because I do know that 10 years from now, stocks will most likely be higher and most likely be a lot higher. So what I did was I looked at rolling 10-year total return periods since World War II. And he's absolutely correct. The median total return was 11.7%, meaning every year, on average, an investor got a near 12% return, including dividends. But the key is you've got to be a long-term holder. And in 97% of these rolling 10-year periods, we saw that the market was in positive territory. So it's interesting, whenever somebody says to me, you know, Sam, investing is really just gambling, I say, oh, yeah, well, please tell me, in that case, which casino pays the investor more than 80% of the time, because when you're looking at individual year performances, the S&P's total return has been positive 80% of the time.
Wow. Those are pretty good statistics. You can kind of you can bet a little money on something like that. That's pretty impressive. Sam, what do you think of China? China's been thrown out there as one of the reasons why all this is happening. Do you think that's valid, or do you think it's just that China's just going through some growing pains and we're having a hard time figuring it out?
Well, I think the latter. I think China is going through growing pains. Back in 2011, their economy grew by more than 14%. In 2011, they were up 9.5%. Now it's expected that their growth is going to approximate 6.5% this year. Certainly 6.5% is almost three times what we are likely to grow for all of 2015 here in the U.S. So for developed nations, boy, 6.5% is an enviable number.
Right.
But let's face it, China is that engine of economic optimism that happens to be cloaked in a lot of smoke and mirrors. So investors are a bit concerned whenever things stumble over there because they really don't have the transparency to know exactly what's going on and to be able to make forecasts about what will likely go on.
So I see you're in the same camp as me. Then you don't quite trust all those numbers that are coming out of China. They gotta maybe they make up a few or certainly stretch them out a little bit.
Go ahead,
Suzanne.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's like dealing with somebody who always tells you what they think you want to hear.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's probably true. All right. Now you mentioned something really interesting. I asked you if this pullback. That you're buying personally, and you kind of gave some rules of thumb that I thought the listeners might benefit from. Could you explain that?
Yes, I can't perfectly time the market on the downside, meaning I did not put money to work Tuesday afternoon, but I did put money to work after it fell by more than 5%. The reason is that we have had 60 declines of 5 to 10%, or what I call pullbacks. The average decline is 7%. We've now had 20 corrections. The average decline is 14%. So I use these decline averages as thresholds that sort of trigger me to put money to work. So whenever the market falls by about 7%, then I say to myself, all right, it's time to go against my gut and put some money to work. And if it falls by 14%, let's put some more money to work. So that way I am forcing myself to take advantage of these lower prices. And in the long run, it tends to work out quite nicely.
Yeah, you're using an automatic strategy that kind of takes out some of the emotions. And you do certain things at certain points. By the way, can you tell us how far down did we get? Did we get a real-life correction?
Yes, we did. We fell about 12% and change through Tuesday evening. We started at 2130.82 and we closed at 1867 and change, so a bit more than a 12% correction.
Okay, so we got a correction, didn't get a bear market because bear markets are 20%. Do you think we might get a bear market on this second dip, or is the second dip you were talking about earlier just kind of takes you pretty much maybe a little lower or down to where you were before?
I think we stay in the correction camp, mainly because I still see the U.S. economy expanding. Just take a look at GDP numbers that came out this morning. Also, with the yield curve, the difference between the 10-year yield and the 3-month Treasury yield, it's still pretty sharp. So a steep yield curve is typically positive for stocks.
That's a great ending. Sam, thank you so much for being with us. Hope you have a great day. Hope you make a little money, Sam, on all those stocks that you bought the other day. So, anyway, thank you again. Look forward to having you back.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.